is time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to another episode of Viewpoint on Sunday on America Out Loud. Malcolm is off this week. This is Dennis Santiago, your guest host for today. Today we are going to be going over a number of interesting topics. The national news comes up first. We'll be talking about the budget. The segment two will be a focus on the state of California, where, as California goes, so goes the nation, they say. We'll finish up again with our normal roundtable discussion at the end of the hour. Without further ado, joining me today for our national news segment is we have George McClellan, who is a historian and political analyst. His professional career spans 43 years in law enforcement and the U.S. Naval Investigative Service. He was a former chippy in my end of the world. That's a California Highway Patrol. Also joining us today is my dear friend and mentor, Thomas Lipscomb, who was the founding CEO of the New York Times book company, Times Books. He is a fellow at the Center for Digital Life in New York. Good morning, gentlemen. So question one of the day is, the top of the news. The omnibus bill has been signed. President Trump says he signed it reluctantly. And he points out that, these things are compromises. This is the same thing his predecessor and every other president before him has had to live with. Not happy with the pork that's in it, but the needs of the nation's defense in the end swung him to sign the thing. George, what's your take on the president's compromise?
Well, interesting, that 2,000-page thing, we've seen this before, produced, laid out on the desk of congressmen with 2 days to read it. Who's going to read that? And, that's like reading Gone with the Wind. In an hour, it can't be done. Not even Cliff's Notes version could help this bill. He wants money for the military. I got that. How he allows, he could have thrown this all back in the Democrats' lap by vetoing the bill and saying, get rid of Planned Parenthood. We're not running butcher factories or for the Democrats. That's another issue that will come up again. He's just cut. What we have here, though, is an argument on increasing deficits and the political argument on who's going to save the deep state. And I think we're focused right there, right now, on that very point.
Yeah, I agree with you. Very clearly, you saw the establishment hitting back for as much as they could and in those 2,000 pages. Tom, your take on, how the president's compromise worked out for him?
Well, I think it isn't a compromise. He didn't have any choice. The Congress has the power of the purse, not the president. And basically, the smartest thing he could do is to accept this bad deal now and then show his teeth in September when it comes up for review and it's close to the election. Then if we want to do a lot of posturing, it has a definite effect on rallying his base. Right now, all he would do is create an impasse at Congress at a time in which things are already in flux with the various new appointments, the attack on the secret police established by the disastrous Obama administration, shown the first step was getting rid of McCabe. And we see the markets are very uncertain because they don't understand what's going on, nor will they for some time. Basically, it's a stutter step and a brilliant program sweeping forward in foreign policy and the economy. And the object now is not to get hung up on something it'll embarrass and weaken his presidency.
There you go. Well, and, speaking of, I don't think there's a case for anyone to say that, as the Chinese like to call him, Donald the Strong is not doing well on his agenda. And speaking of which, in foreign policy, it's been a big week for the president. He on Wednesday. You know, he got the king or the crown prince of Saudi Arabia came and visited, placed an order for $1 billion in military goods. You know, and that's got implications for which direction the Middle East is going. I noticed, interestingly enough, in a small news article that Saudi Arabia actually approved an overflight by an Air India aircraft to go over its territory and save about 2 hours of flying time with a destination of Tel Aviv, Israel. So there's some interesting stuff going on in the foreign policy world on that front. Thursday, he's replaced people, and John Bolton is back in the driver's seat of the National Security Council. And you know, John is he's a known hawk, a hawk's hawk, and believer in brinksmanship negotiation. So you know, there's another aspect of foreign policy that's developing for this country. And on Friday, as part when he was signing the omnibus bill, he brought out. And reported specifically on progress on trade agreements that and in particular the trade agreements with South Korea. He's deferred tariffs for other nations until May to give them time to figure out their own agreements. And as Tom pointed out, you know, the markets are completely confused. They don't know what's going on. You know, that world is living on volatility crack at this point. And so I'm not really sure that the markets have a handle on just what's going on down at the other end of the Acela train. But it's been a big week. So, back to you, Tom, first, you know, because you mentioned it. What do you think of Trump's big week in foreign policy?
I think it's not Trump's big week. I think it's a big week for America to return to an intelligent foreign policy after the disastrous Obama administration and the disastrous of George W. Bush's administration, which believed in trying to create democracies in places that can't even spell it. I think we all owe Rex Tillerson a great debt in solidifying the Middle East with his contacts in Saudi Arabia, et cetera. But it was the right time for him to go and bring in a new team. Look at the extraordinary progress after the shitstorm we had with Obama in the Arab revolution. We've now got Egypt cooperating with Israel and Saudi Arabia, and a strong flanking presence against Iran. And I think the new team is just the guys to play this game, as well as to play out the hand with North Korea, whatever that's going to be.
George, your take.
Follow the money. Follow the money. Nothing goes on anywhere in the world without big money behind it. That includes our omnibus spending bill. That's an omnibus word. And whenever I hear those two words put together, I know somebody's going to get screwed. It's not the politicians, it's the taxpayers. We have to follow the money. That's the basic thought that should enter anybody's mind for the first time. India going to Israel and being allowed to fly over Arab land, that just amazes me. I hadn't heard that until just now. But there's got to be if we need to know it, the motive for that will reveal itself shortly.
It is kind of an amazing time. We haven't really heard much in the mainstream news lately about, you know, hotspots that only a month ago were, top of mind. Iran, North Korea is certainly out there, but you don't hear about Iran. People aren't reporting on the fact that there's not a lot of shooting going on in places like Iraq at the moment. And, you know, we're actually winning our wars, and from a foreign policy perspective, just bringing all that noise down has just created so much more bandwidth for the United States to start to treat these other aspects of its foreign policy.
If it leads, it bleeds.
Yeah, that's true.
What we're ignoring is the takeover of Europe by Islam. That's not reported anywhere by the mainstream media. Sweden is almost now an Islamic country. The their government has capitulated. They put old women on trial for hate crimes when they complain about being raped by Muslim rape gang. You know, we have problems here that we're not even talking about. Great problems.
Yeah, and so when you look at all that stuff, Tom, you think with the bandwidth of and the new team, you know, how where do you think their emphasis is going to be for say the next 12 months or so?
Well, let's first get back and clear up the main your question about the mainstream media. I'm a longtime member of the mainstream media when it worked. Today, it's nothing more than a steno pool that takes press releases and puts them on the front page. They can't analyze anything. They've never been very good at foreign affairs. They're now totally useless in foreign affairs. So expecting anything in the mainstream media to clarify anything is just a non-starter. We have to put our news together carefully from all kinds of other sources to find out what's going on, as George was saying about the Muslim takeover of Europe. As far as I'm concerned, I'm glad I saw Europe when it was Europe and lived there. I'm afraid that the Notre Dame isn't going to look so good with two minarets on either side of it. Since the Arab world primary product is garbage, you go anywhere in the Arab world, that's what you see. Everything else is imported. I expect Europe is going to be a garbage heap of both people and institutions before too long.
Well said.
Well said. There are certainly challenges that I think have beset that continent.
For Eastern Europe. Eastern Europe is in great shape, and that's where I visit now. I don't go to Western Europe.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting in that when you look at the world from that perspective, the Eastern Europe, the Romani have pretty much held their own throughout all this, and it's really the people of the land of Gaul that have found themselves overrun yet again by yet another invader. It's historical. Hey, speaking of changes in history and stuff. So we got this storm that popped up because it's the new world and Tom your Center for Digital Life work puts you right smack in the middle of all this, but Facebook got its nose bloodied this week because a company called Cambridge Analytica apparently data mined them and in the end, some of their people basically got late stage conscience out of it and started complaining about it. But when you look at the numbers of this company and many other companies that go into data mining, not just for political purposes, but for commercial purposes as well, they never really touch more than 1.8% of the Facebook user base. And you kind of got to wonder whether or not this thing has any legs to it at all, or if it's just a bunch of guys trying to, curl on their feathers because they're programmers that don't understand exactly how this the medium works. What do you think, Tom?
Well, it's been going on a long time. And this is all psychodrama. As you pointed out, commercially, there's no reality to it. You've got a bunch of firms that have been posturing to have, incredible superhuman abilities using this data mining for the last 20 years. And Obama's used it, and Soros funded one that was supposed to solve all the problems of the Democratic Party and obviously didn't. Now we've got Cambridge. And all these firms totally misrepresent their real effectiveness. It kind of reminds me of the big $100,000 Russian collusion effort on Facebook. I mean, as if that was enough to, run a fishing expedition in the Miramichi River for four people in a Facebook ad placement.
Oh, yeah. When you look at the $52 million budget of U.S. Political campaigns, that entire effort, it's not even a drop in a bucket. It's like dew waiting to settle out.
It's a the whole thing is so pathetically small. It reminds me of the old rock in the 55-gallon drum. a lot of noise with absolutely no substance.
Yeah. Hey, George, you know, like,
yes, sir.
You got the, so you know, people have this overblown perception, you know, because the internet caught, you know, it's confirmation bias is a big thing, and people buy into these things when, you know, this is like really like wisps in the wind. And what do you think of that in terms of, like, you know, why aren't people getting the fact that they're being manipulated on this medium?
I think everybody knows they're being manipulated. You don't want people to know your privacy, don't put it on Facebook. Are you concerned? Will you delete your Facebook account because of privacy concerns? No. Are you concerned about online privacy? Yes, only when they turn on the TV monitor to watch me. Does political advertising on Facebook, did that influence your vote? Absolutely not. You know, the thing is, if you don't want to be there, get rid of Facebook.
Yeah.
Don't participate in surveys. Simple as that. And you're off the grid. You're off the grid.
He's absolutely right. And if you want to solve a whole problem in about 5 minutes, you simply hardwire IDs to everything posted online.
Yeah, there you go.
It's time we did this. Enough anonymous, enough fake names. All the games stop when there's real ID behind the words being spoken.
Yeah, there you go. Couldn't have said it better. You know, I once wrote an article about that pointed out ways that you could not be, you know, things anybody could do to not be bamboozled by the internet and or to mainstream media. It was interesting. I wrote it, and the person I submitted to was old friend Arianna Huffington over at Thrive Global, and she loved it. And I simultaneously submitted it to her follow-on people at the Huffington Post, and they rejected it.
Well, you gotta golly. Look, Hillary lost, right?
Has
the American people been bamboozled by the entire news media, all television, all Facebook? I mean, and so the American people have got a hell of a lot of wisdom in them. And I think Abraham Lincoln had something to say about that.
Yes, sir. And I agree. I mean, people underestimate the ability of Americans to think all the time, and they pay the price for it. Well, gentlemen, I thank you for discussing these topics with me. And we will be right back with the next segment of America Out Loud's Viewpoint on Sunday.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount, or call 844-869-9958.
And welcome back to Viewpoint on Sunday with Malcolm Out Loud. I'm Dennis Santiago, guest hosting this week. And in this segment, we are going to concentrate on my home state of California. California gets an interesting rap in the United States. It seems to have decided that it wants to go to war with the federal government. Which is kind of turning into an interesting thing. Today, we are fortunate in that we have two other Californians to discuss this topic with. Joining us today is Ian Henderson, who is a millennial. and absolutely delightful. Writes for the Millennial Review and specializes as a foreign policy contributor to that publication. Also joining us is Jennifer Van Laar, who writes for Red State and is also part of the movement called Fight Sanctuary State, which has become very active in the state of California. And good morning to both of you. Let's start right out, and let's start with the big news of the week that is, you know, was part of on everybody's mind because the president mentioned it twice as he lamented signing the omnibus funding bill. So he made a very big point of his disappointment that Congress, after all the negotiating and all the movement going back and forth and all of the insistence that it was important, that the one thing he asked for that didn't happen was a substantive deal on DACA and the wall. And he was so disappointed in it, he mentioned it twice. And so Jennifer, you know, from a California perspective, what do you make of the fact that Congress just couldn't pull it through?
Couldn't or wouldn't? What I make of it is that they've had a long time to look at this issue. I mean, at least 6 months from when the president said he wanted to end the executive order that Obama started. But immigration and this issue of these dreamers was an issue far before that. So they've had years to come up with something, but they didn't. I think the Republicans are afraid of looking like racists because anything they do is going to be termed that by the Democrats. And the Democrats like to have this issue to rail on. I don't think they really want to do anything about it because then what are they going to have for their talking point?
Yeah.
That's how I look at it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so I looked at this and the thing that immediately came to my head, oddly enough, came to me in Spanish, you know, which was basically vámonos, muchachos y muchachas. And I'm going, you know, did Trump just win the Hispanic vote? And you know, are we going to see a mass re-registration of America's Spanish-speaking population as Republicans out of this? What do you think, Ian?
It's definitely a possibility. And on the omnibus bit, something that I think everyone didn't notice or didn't really hit the mainstream media was we did fund a wall. In fact, $500 million towards a wall, but a wall in Jordan, not a wall in the United States. In the omnibus bill, there's actually allocation of $500 million towards a wall to prevent jihadists from entering Jordan from Iraq and Syria. So I guess the Republicans and Democrats missed the memo on where the wall was supposed to be. So,
well, I thought it was supposed to be around San Francisco.
Well, that would be interesting.
Yeah, there we go. Okay, so I mean, yeah, I mean, you just look at that. Now, meanwhile, interior to the state, you know, we of course have this fight that goes on. As you will both recall, Attorney General Jeff Sessions came out, Governor Brown fulminated at the federal government. In using first names, actually, a very familiar thing. And I noticed that the California Attorney General, Becerra, you know, he's kind of like going, well, he's my client. I probably would advise him to not say anything, but he's saying something. And, well, we'll have to deal with that later. So in the aftermath of that, we have the city of Los Alamitos, you know, which is Southern California, right? Deep in the heart of what they call, you know, the coastal morass of California. But it is south of the orange border, which is something that will make sense to those of us that live in California. We know what that means. They're the little code words of the locals. Mm-hmm. And so Jennifer, I mean, you know, fight sanctuary state, right? You know, so here's Los Al basically saying, you know, we believe in the Constitution. What does that do? Do you think that spreads to other cities in California and other counties that will basically tell Sacramento no?
Oh, it already has. In fact, the Orange County Board of Supervisors is going to meet on Tuesday, and there's a couple agenda items having to do with this. One of the supervisors has said that he wants to restrict the enforcement of SB 54 things within Orange County. And then another supervisor said she just wants to go on and have them vote basically on a county level the same way that Los Al did, which actually has a lot more of a bite to it. You'll notice you haven't heard Jerry Brown coming out and just decrying what Los Alamitos did, because they don't have jail facilities that they are in control of, or law enforcement they're in control of. So it really, it's a wonderful vote, and it really rallied the troops, so to speak, in California that are sick of having these laws from Sacramento that none of us agree with passed. But it didn't have a lot of bite. But if Orange County does that, that's huge. It's one of the most populous counties in the state. They have the sheriff's department, not only for the unincorporated areas, but a lot of their cities in Orange County contract with the sheriff's for their law enforcement and the jail system. So that would be enormously beneficial to the fight against these things from Sacramento.
Awesome.
And there's other cities within Orange County, and even Mission Viejo, I believe, is in San Diego County. They're going to be talking about this too.
I think Mission Viejo is OC. So, you know,
is it okay?
Yeah. Cause I mean, you know,
I get all of the, you know, I'm up in Ventura County, all of that. Like, you get south of the orange border and it's just one.
There you go. See, you know, so this is, here's his,
okay.
Yeah, it's easy. Even the local stuff. I mean, yeah, you're from Ventura. You know, I grew up in Fountain Valley, so I'm from Orange County, you know, we don't call it OC, you know, that's for visitors. Okay, so Ian, taking that a step further, you know, we're also starting to see a little bit of activism at the political level, and I am curious to hear your opinion on the fact that actress Stacey Dash has filed for an exploratory committee to run for Congress. You know, she's a black actress.
Clueless.
Yeah. Great movie. And, you know, and all of us can talk Valley when we have to. But, you know, here is a woman basically coming out and saying, you know, it's time to get involved. And she's a Republican. So, you know, what's your bent on that? Is that another trend that we're going to see in the state?
I think so. And I think we're seeing a lot more. I mean, California has gone so far down the leftist rabbit hole that we really can't get that much worse. So I think a lot of people are getting so fed up, people that are either center right or center or even center left. And they're starting to realize, like, this isn't me. This is what I represent. We have to fight back against this. And that's why you're seeing people like Stacey Dash run for these districts and areas that have been traditionally Democrat. And they have had these uncontested incumbents that have just run for re-election over and over again without any challengers. And now you're starting to see some challengers. And now we're seeing, even at the gubernatorial level, a couple polls just came out for John Cox, one of the two major Republicans running for the governor's seat. One was, I think, the Feldman Group had him polling at 22% to Gavin Newsom's 26%. And another poll came out with him tied with Gavin Newsom at 45%. So I was pretty shocked to see that in deep blue California. But I think the pendulum very well may be shifting.
Well, there you go. I mean, you know, life in the state of Jefferson, man. which is, yeah. So for you listeners that are not from California, that is code for the fairly unpopulated parts of the state of California that have complained about underrepresentation in Sacramento in comparison to the highly populated cities which dominate all of the power in the state legislature. And their battle cry is create the state of Jefferson, own all the water, own all the agriculture, and starve the rest of the people to death until they come back to their senses. Yeah, no asparagus for you. Yeah. Anyway, so we move. Yeah, we move on. Let's talk a little bit about California fiscal condition. I mean, the state is it's known to be it crows about being the sixth largest economy on the planet, but it's also one of the most underwater budget states in the nation, and it's a bit of a fiscal disaster. Reaching into ordinary people's pocketbooks seems to be kind of a favorite way to nickel and dime the state back into some sort of solvency. Gasoline taxes, road use taxes. What do you think in terms of how long the people of California are going to put up with this? Let's start with you, Jennifer.
I think we were already at that point. And I think that ties in with the sanctuary state thing, because for a lot of the years, I think people just went into business. California is so big that we were disconnected from each other and everyone commutes to work, and you're raising your family, working, doing that kind of thing, and not really paying, other than us nerds, a lot of attention to the government. But what all of this with the gas tax last year and then the sanctuary stuff this year, people are finally waking up and going, wait a minute, nobody's really been representing me up there. And I'm sick of this. Every time I turn around, it's like a kid, you go to the store. I want this, throw that out in the cart. I want this. And then finally you go, oh my gosh, stop it. I think that's the point that the Californians are at now.
Well, yeah, we're there. I mean, you know, so, and I mean, you know, in terms of the point that Californians are at now, one of the effects of this is California's a very expensive place to live. And expensive to the point that, you know, while we have a visible homelessness problem in terms of Skid Row's, and I mean, you know, let's face it, man, you know, I remember you, Ian, you're young, so I don't know if you ever remember a time that downtown San Francisco didn't smell like pee, but there was a time
wow,
that walking around the Embarcadero was actually a pleasant experience. And our Skid Rows are quite demeaning at this point, and in comparison to other states where a much more caring approach is made for taking care of homeless people. But what I want to ask you about is, yeah, we have another class of homeless people in California, what are loosely termed a working homeless, the people that live in their cars. They have jobs. They have, and by all accounts, they have decent jobs. What's your take on the fact that, you know, even if you are making a living, you're still driven into third world living conditions in this state?
Well, it sure makes California an unappealing place to move to. That's for sure. When you're seeing, you know, the amount of homelessness, I think it's the amount of homelessness in L.A. has doubled under Eric Garcetti's mayorship, from like 25,000 to 50,000 people, and that's only in a few years. So that goes to show the state of affairs within LA alone.
We've mentioned onerous taxes. We've mentioned culture wars. A lot of these people that have left, you know, admittedly, probably were not natives to begin with. They came here, you know, saw, bought the T-shirt, and took off, right? But one of the consequences of that I'd like both of your opinion on is that, you know, at this point, it's also distended the balance of viewpoints that are available in California, particularly at the political level. I mean, there's in some cases there are too few people left to fight on for issues. And So what's the case to stay? I mean, you know, we live here. We know, those of us who live here, that we live in a red state with blue edges, but the blue edges are highly populated. So, mm-hmm. Why do we stay? Ian, I'm going to start with you because, you know, you just got out. You know, we went to the same alma mater, by the way, you know, like the Go Bruins.
Go Bruins,
yeah. So, like, you know, what's the point of staying in California under these conditions, my friend?
Well, I've been here for most of my life, so I don't really know much else. I've traveled a lot, but, you know, maybe it's the weather. I don't know. Also, it's just fun to be a thorn in the side of the left. I don't know. It's fun to see how much we can change. Because California, I mean, I think of the time that, you know, Reagan was governor, or in the 80s when California voted overwhelmingly for Ronald Reagan. And you think, and you look at that, and you look at California today, and it's night and day. And it's like, is it possible for it to shift back? And I think it is. As I mentioned before, I think the pendulum is swinging. It can only go... Politics and the political spectrum can only go so far in one direction to where it starts to swing back in the other direction. So I think it's a cause worth fighting for. I think a lot of people have given up on California, and I think it's something, because I'm a native Californian, it's something I want to fight for. It's my home, and I don't want to just give up on it quite yet.
Oh, there you go. Well, Jennifer, I mean, you know, so like... If I look up your Facebook page, I know the reason you want to stay here is because you are an aspiring beach bum.
That's right.
So, you know, aside from the fact that
we gotta have goals.
Yeah. Looking at the Pacific Ocean is like a big deal. You know. So, what's your view on this fight or flight thing in terms of you? What do you say to people that are thinking? You know, it's time to bail.
Well, obviously, every family's financial and job situation is unique. And, you know, I would never just blanket say, you know, you have to stay here. You have to fight for it. I have the unique experience of having lived in the South for 20 years. I grew up in Simi Valley, where a mile from where I live now, and then came back after 25 years. And I came back for family reasons, but I also wanted to fight. I saw this. I grew up in the Reagan years of Reagan president. California to me is a state of mind as well. And I know people not from here will laugh and roll their eyes, but it's true. Like I get off the plane at LAX and walk outside, and even though it could be bus smog filled air, it's home, and it makes a different feeling in your body. We're full of dreams. We're people that take big ideas and make it happen. And we've been stifled by our own government. And of course, we have the beautiful weather, but I think it's absolutely worth taking back. And it's absolutely possible, because we have to tap back into that dream. All these people that came here from other places came here in a way because they had that dream too, to do something different with their lives.
There you go. And
we got to get that back top of mind for everyone.
There you go. Well,
absolutely.
You've just heard from the Wolverines of California. And more viewpoint when we come back.
We are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@americaoutloud.com.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com, where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
And welcome back to the third segment of Viewpoint on America Out Loud on Sunday. And Malcolm Out Loud is still not here, still MIA. And so this is Dennis Santiago, guest hosting this Sunday. And we have arrived at the roundtable portion of our show. Today we have
bit of a mix of viewpoints that we will be bringing. We have joining us on the regulars list, Ava Armstrong, who is a political commentator, a radio personality. Ava is an author who writes about everyday men and women with a focus on patriotism. And speaking of patriots, we are also joined today by my dear friend and a wonderful actress, Kelly Carlson, who of Nip Tuck fame. And, you know, so we get Kimber Henry joining us today. Kelly is... Kelly,
we don't want Kimber here. She doesn't know anything about what's going on.
You know what? Kelly Carlson does, and Kelly Carlson
yes.
is among other things in her world, also works with the Center for Security Policy, and the real Kelly Carlson, as she is known on Instagram, is quite the commentator on many topics of interest to the world. And so let's just start on in. Let's start with hacktivism, non-state actors. We have seen in the past couple of weeks in the world of gun control, non-state actors, corporations, taking matters into their own hands, setting up rules for how and when they sell firearms to people that have nothing to do with the laws on the books. We have seen a resurgence of financial companies imposing restrictions on the types of companies that they will do business with. It is essentially a move into the world of influencing public policy through non-state actors. And so here's the question to bounce back and forth between both of you. Is this hacktivism healthy for America? Is it the way to go, where all you really have to do is influence a few people and circumvent U.S. law? Ava, you're the traditional voice on this thing. Well, you start off. You know, what do you think of this?
Oh gosh, I'm a big constitutional conservative, and you know that already if you've heard me. I would say this is very dangerous road to go down. You know, we have a constitution, we have a First Amendment, and a Second Amendment, and on, and I think these companies that try to mold the laws or to change or socially engineer. That's really what I think is going on. And there are many, many people that are very uncomfortable with being socially engineered. So I would think this is very dangerous territory.
Yeah. Kelly, you know, so if you look at the stuff that's been coming out, particularly on the gun control topic, and I know you're very active in that, and the rules that these companies are putting into place, they come straight out of the playbook of one Michael Bloomberg and his organization. And Bloomberg and his other cohort in social engineering, as Ava puts it, then that is exactly what they are doing. George Soros have been building cadres of grassroots using money, grassroots cadres and using social media to push agendas on businesses, big businesses in the case of what we've been seeing, small businesses in the case of in other cases where, you know, people have been calling up small businesses and basically bullying them, using the internet to gather people to inundate them with phone calls. I mean, you know, the bottom line is this is internet bullying by adults. So what's your take on that in terms of, you know, like, is this really what democracy is coming to?
Well, it's interesting because I think the people, I'm not talking about George Soros. We all know what he is. I think the people on the ground of this that are being influenced, the people that are activists, I think they believe they're doing the right thing. I do. There's plenty that aren't, and that would be George Soros and his crew. But, you know, here's what I would say to the big businesses, and this is what I say to my friends that are celebrities and that are speaking out on their side about this, about gun control. I say I'd be very, very careful to align yourself with a solution that is going to fail. And you need to ask yourself, when it does fail and people die, because no criminal or somebody who is mentally ill is obviously going to follow the law. When those people die, when there's another school shooting or a mall shooting, are you going to stand up publicly and take responsibility and say, you know what, I'm really sorry I didn't allow any other solution into the narrative before this happened? Because I have debated this with people, and they will not, they refuse to listen to any other solution other than gun control. So my only question to them is, when it fails, are you going to publicly apologize for standing in the way of real solutions? Because I promise you, that's what's going to happen.
Oh, there you go.
So just make that decision first, because I am going to protest you when that happens, loudly.
There you go. And see, Ava, you can see why she's my muse.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah. So
I get emotional.
Yeah. Well, you know, here's something else to get emotional about. Let's talk a little bit about, deep state politics. The world of this phenomenon of Never Trump that seems to be very, very strong on both the left and on the right. It's basically the swamp versus the outsider, which I believe makes for a really good B movie, Kelly. So you look at this, and the alliances are there, and Ava, I'd like you to comment on, you know, like, Trump has very few supporters, and the Freedom Caucus being the element of Congress that seems to back him in the face of these two Never Trump coalitions that are cooperating with each other against the administration. So Ava, what's your take on that in terms of why won't these people cooperate when the agenda seems to be succeeding?
Well, they hate Trump so much that they can't even, you know, they can't even get up and eat their cornflakes in the morning without seeing his picture on the box. I mean, they're obsessed. And this is a very dangerous thing as well. When you allow something that's not even reasonable to rule you, I think it's, again, a very dangerous territory to be in. I'll have you know, I protested Barack Obama and everything he stood for, but I never, ever said he was not my president. He was a duly elected president, and I disagreed vehemently with him, so much so that I joined the Tea Party, and I did everything I could legally, okay, to make a statement against what he was doing to our country. This thing that's going on with Trump, I don't think I've ever seen anything like this before in my lifetime. I've read in history books about such things. It's a very, very sad place where we are right now. The people that are Never Trumpers, I just want to speak to them directly in the Congress. We know who you are, and it's a very thinly veiled thing that you're doing, and you will be ousted. So, you know, so be it. The people will speak. So that's what I have to say about it.
Okay. Well, you know what? Well, I would say something about that, but I've been around a while and know not to argue with a woman when she's determined. So Kelly, a little bit of different spin on the question. As Ava pointed out, we're starting to see Republicans start to retire from Congress, which is and exactly why they're doing that, I'm not quite sure. But the other phenomenon that I've also begun to notice is that on the Democratic side, Hillary Clinton's campaign left the Democratic Party in an absolute shambles. it basically disintegrated on itself. And one of the things that you're starting to see lately is you're starting to see a new crop of candidates coming in. And interestingly enough, there's a new crop of candidates that are entering the apparatus of the Democratic Party that are all a bunch of former intelligence people. And they are, as a block, moving into the vacuum. And, you've done work with the Center for Security Policy, and as part of that are aware that, you know, when intel people move into a political apparatus, that's not necessarily the best thing in the world for the political system. So, you know, so what's your take on these guys? You know, are they... There's two theories there. Either they've got an idea of that they see a vacuum in the Democratic Party, and they are, you know, if they're operator trained, you know, maybe this is something they want to do. Or is it a bunch of people that got laid off from three letter agencies that basically are just trying to find a way not to have to leave the Virginia area? What do you think, Kelly?
Well, I'm going to combine both questions to both of us with that. And again, I'm an outsider. I'm not an intellect like you. This is just my observation. You know, with both establishments wanting Trump out, first of all, when he first started running and I saw both establishments go after him, I'm like, that's my guy. That's all I need to know. That's all. If left and right are trying to get rid of this guy, that's my guy.
Exactly.
You know, he is... You know, here's another thing with the left, and I don't mean the politicians, I mean the voters. Trump is cleaning out the right. You should be so happy about that. If you're a lefty, look at what Trump is doing. He's holding his own party accountable. Don't you like that? Don't you go, wow, that's an honest guy. He's not playing party politics. He's holding his own, you know, camp's feet to the fire. And that's why you're seeing people go. He's going, oh, you're corrupted, you're out. You know, maybe that's not what they say on the news, but you know that's what's taking place. It's probably why people are retiring. You know, maybe, I'm not naming names at all, but if someone is retiring from Congress, maybe Trump had a decent working relationship with this person, and he said, yeah, you know, maybe if you want the option to retire, but maybe he found something out about him. I don't know. I'm just guessing. As far as the intel people, I really don't have an answer for that so much. I think what you suggested is probably right, because Trump is just, you know, spring cleaning D.C. So all these intel people coming in and running for office or for a seat, I don't know. And I haven't heard anybody speculate why either. Have you?
I have not. And, you know, but I'm seeing as the shuffling of the chairs of the Titanic continues, that you're seeing artifacts like this turn up. I mean, you know, government, the U.S. government is a very big machine, right? And it's got a lot of apparatus in it. It's got a lot of people in it. And these people are, in the end, you know, they still lead lives. They still need places to live. Their children go to schools. And in this case, you know, probably go to school in the Virginia area, uprooting them because it's time to move on and find something else to do. Your service to the government period is over. It's a hard thing on people, but you know, but does that mean that you, if a lot of people are doing it and saying, well, my next step is to stay here is to play the revolving door thing, but in this case, revolve into, Capitol Hill. Yeah. I'm not so sure about that. Ava, you know, take 30 seconds and give me your take on this.
Well, I mean, if somebody's been in the intel agencies, they have a right to run for office. And, you know, people will look at them and make their minds up. I think that's the American way. That's our system. I don't care if you've, you know, run a strip joint. I mean, if you want to run for an office, you run for it. And the people decide.
Oh, there you go. Well, there's my lead in. Speaking of strip joints, as we finish this, get to there, you know, so like, because I just got to have to ask the question this way, you know. So Kimber?
Yeah, I'll go get her.
What's with Stormy?
Well, they're good friends. To me, this is, and maybe this is just short-sighted of me, I don't know. I just see George Soros. Anytime I see someone like this, something like this, I just see George Soros having his guy call the girl and say, okay, we need you on our team. Can you take one for the team? You'll be famous. You'll get so much attention, but we need you to do this, dot, dot, dot. That's how I see it. Could be completely wrong, but anything that pops up, I just automatically say George Soros.
Well, there you
go. I don't know.
Yeah, Ava, I mean, you know, so there's one view of it.
I'm in her camp. I see what's going on behind the woman who's sitting in front of the camera. That's the question I ask myself. I try to put myself in this woman's shoes, okay, and say, like the Playboy bunny or whatever the lady was, McDougal, was that her name? Very attractive lady. She was on CNN with what's his name? I can't even think of his name. That's bad. I don't watch CNN. Anderson Cooper. Thank you. I see. This is how much I watch CNN. But his questions were so demeaning. I mean, did he wear protection? I mean, it's like, to me, the questions that he asked her in that interview were more demeaning than even assuming she had any kind of relationship with Trump. I mean, And the whole thing of this is whether or not these women are being paid by George Soros or, you know, they're obviously doing this for some reason to benefit themselves. OK, but even that aside, OK, I put that aside. These are people that Trump knew 10, 11, 12 years ago, maybe longer. He may have been single when he had any relationship or, you know, anything with these women. So I'm asking myself, if I were in office right now and someone was data mining my background, I mean, you know, how many boyfriends did she have? I mean, is this really pertinent to a leadership, you know, to a presidency? No, I don't really think it is, especially when we had a president who used a young woman as a humidor and is in the Oval Office while he was there. I mean, come on, guys, you know?
And with that, I think it's time to close out this segment.
Yes.
And have a smoke.
Yeah, really.
Oh, there we go. All right. Well, thank you very much to both of you. I know we took a long trip around the Washington Mall on this one. This is my first time actually hosting Viewpoint, so it's been an experience. And with that, this is Viewpoint This Sunday. It will always deliver an honest analysis and opinion on all sides of the political aisle. The show does not discriminate against an opinion. This is the way we are always in search of the out loud truth.